Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Mexican Onda. What we do here on the pod is dive deep into the choppy waters of the Mexican soccer world, analyze the bigger storylines, the drama that inevitably surfaces, and much, much more. I'm Cesar Hernandez, and like usual, I'm joined by John Arnold and Tom Marshall. Quick hello to you, John. How are you doing, man?
Sounds like I'm better than you, man. That was a little bit of a drab intro, but the show is more fun than that, and I'm excited to be here.
Did it sound that drab?
I don't know, maybe drab. I just think your tone, man. Spice it up.
I think you should do it again.
And hello to you as well, Tom. Looking forward. How you doing, man?
I'm not bad. Not complain. Well, I can actually, but I won't.
Well, see, Tom sounds more sad than I do. Let's be real. But guys, let's get right to today's pod and talk about the big topic, which is Liga MX managers. More specifically, we're going to discuss how often these managers get dropped from clubs, which clubs have made the most managerial changes, and the potential factors behind these decisions. And John, let's start with you. I mean, when it comes to the numbers for the frequency of these managerial changes, you know, in comparison to other leagues, like, what do these numbers look like?
Yeah, I think that we definitely, in some ways, overstate how often Liga MX teams fire managers, but it is a huge factor, a huge thing that happens, a huge talking point in the league. And as we'll get into, I think there's a number of factors behind that. But yeah, our pal Status Kicks on Twitter, who uses a lot of data from a bunch of different sources, looked at from 2015 to 2020, the average length of managerial spells. And Liga MX is just below the middle of the pack. The Premier League leads the way. The Argentine Superliga looks like it's down there at the last spot with that average manager lasting 182 days. Liga MX is at 270. Did this graphic before. One of the reasons that we're talking about this, Luis Fernando Tena was booted from Chivas. So I think that drops them a spot, and you see them down below leagues like Chile, below Austria, below Germany, but better than like Uruguay, Portugal, Colombia. So on the one hand, I think that it can be overstated just how difficult it is to retain a job in Liga MX. On the other hand, I do think that maybe it's a little unfair to act like this is the only league in the world where this is happening, the only league in the world where there's pressure on managers. One thing that I do think is absolutely notable is the discrepancy between the length of, you know, the tenure that like a Tuca has, and you look at everyone else is always changing the manager. Where, and I think a lot of the other leagues, you have two or three highly successful teams who either retain their managers or their managers move on to a higher league. Where in Liga MX, it seems like your only option is sort of failure. Rarely do we see a manager kind of graduate from Liga MX. And even when that happens, you know, like Turco Mohamed going to Celta, it didn't go so hot, right? So I think that's a big issue for Mexican football, and something that does help to contribute to this feeling of this being a sort of unique, a phenomenon unique to Liga MX.
Yeah, to me, the numbers were actually, I guess I shouldn't say the numbers. I guess what surprised me was that, that there are a number of leagues that have a lower average. You know, I assume Liga MX could be at the very, very bottom. Obviously, due to the formatting of Liga MX and due to the having two seasons per year, you're more than likely not going to see that number, you know, higher than what you'll see in Europe or in MLS. But I was actually very surprised. I mean, for example, in Turkey, it's 152 days. That's almost shocking. You know, in the Super League in Argentina, it's 182. This is all compared to the 270 day average that you see in Liga MX. So yes, I still think that 270, that's definitely, I don't think that's enough time. I think ideally you'd want to see more so of maybe a full year for many of these managers. Obviously, there's a lot of factors that we're going to go into as to why they don't get the full year on average. But at the same time, like you said, John, I mean, just like maybe it's a little overblown, you know, like how we think that there is constant changes in Liga MX, and, you know, that no manager really has like an opportunity or much time, when in Turkey they get, it's just a really, really small amount of time.
2 days. But, you know, I'll ask another question. How many of the 18 Liga MX clubs would either of you say have got a playing identity?
No, that's a fair question too. I mean,
see, this club plays in this way, because I think it goes beyond the managers. This question, it goes to the club philosophy, DNA, and you know, this is one of the issues. I mean, honestly, like for both of you, can you think of one or two or a few Liga MX clubs that do have a philosophy, a playing style that you can kind of equate with what you see on the field and what you see on the field kind of going back over 2 years?
I mean, I guess I could, but I guess the bigger thing is, like, can we name someone outside of Tigres or Pachuca?
Tigres, like, yeah. Monterrey, and I think Pachuca is a great example. Pachuca is a club that has an idea, right? Even though the manager can change, you see the idea. It's not always successful, but you know what they're trying to do. Not necessarily tactically, but overall the philosophy, right? But I think that's a great point,
Tom. Yeah. It's definitely an excellent point. And yeah, just outside of Tigres, Pachuca, yeah, Monterrey, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, even Tigres, to be honest, it's kind of, we don't know, because it'll depend what the kind of next manager looks like. I mean, it's just so ingrained.
Will there be a next manager? He's not going to think.
But no, I agree with Pachuca, though, because it's like the kind of 4-3-3 that they play is kind of goes through the youth teams as well. And it's, you know, the head coach, he doesn't have to, you know, it's not dictated that every game he has to play kind of the same formation or the 4-2-3-1, you know, a variation of the 4-3-3, 4-2-3-1. But it's the brought in knowing that this is how the team plays. That is probably the only club that I can think of. I think there are other clubs that do think out the box. I think Santos Laguna is the one that, you know, I think for me, they brought possibly the two most important managers, or two of the three most important managers, foreign managers into Liga MX in recent times, which for me is Caixinha and what we're seeing now with Almada for different reasons. And I think that kind of, that feeds the point. I mean, Caixinha was very much transition manager. And I think a lot of his success in Mexico was that he just played the transition game a lot better than everybody else. I think it was quite novel and new in Mexico that, you know, the goalkeeper would get the ball and very, very quickly it'd go straight to the wing and Giannini would be flying down. And it was kind of that was the game plan. And now Almada's doing something, you know, that's not necessarily his game, but they have thought outside the box. Whereas, I think that's the problem. It's a problem with managers as well in terms of how long they stay at the club, and it's a problem in the quality of directors, to be honest. The problem, the quality of people running the clubs. I mean, they don't have an idea. Maybe even the club owners. I mean, this has to come from the top down. I don't think it's just a Mexican thing, because you know, if you look at someone like Manchester United, and you think, oh, you know, big club, they must have really great people working there. Well, you know, if you hire David Moyes, and then you hire Van Gaal, then you hire Mourinho, then you hire Solskjaer on a whim, seemingly, because he won a few games. I mean, it doesn't, that also doesn't show like a clear line of thinking, and I think a lot of the Mexican clubs fall into that trap, and we've seen it this week. I think especially the Atlas case. Yeah. I mean, you go from Rafa Puente, who talks a really good game, talked about identifying with this, you know, the Amigos del Balón, which is Atlas's, you know, one of Atlas's nicknames, you know, friends of the ball. They like to play attacking football. I mean, you know, 10 years living in Guadalajara, the Atlas fans, they're all about it. But and then you hire Coca, who, you know, I think he's had a pretty good managerial career. But you know, I think they conceded 12 goals in 17 games with Cholos. There was a lot of scoreless games. There was a lot of games where there weren't many goals scored. And basically it looks like they've hired a defensive coach now, so they've gone from one to the other, and it's, you see that kind of all over the league, and it doesn't help in terms of a manager, you know, staying there longer. And you know, there's also the idea that that there's natural kind of cycles with managers, and that, you know, if you've got a structure in place where you've got a sporting director and you know, an ownership group who already knows how you're going to play, then the manager is actually only a coach, and that can be recycled while maintaining the structure. But I don't even see that in Mexico either. I mean, I said, apart from Pachuca, I can't think of another club that kind of has that that philosophy, or at least implements it, because there are clubs that also talk a good game.
I think that another thing, and Coca is an example of this, actually, that I think is worth bringing up, that when you talk about the directors, is that sometimes I think that lack of an idea or a lack of commitment to, you know, the managers that are made from the front offices, from the sporting director, from the president, from the owner, from whoever is kind of calling the shots. And that's another thing, is that often it's quite murky as to who's actually making the decisions. But, you know, Coca leaves Tijuana on his own accord, essentially, because of, you know, depending on who's reporting you believe or what have you, a number of different factors, right? So you also have a situation in where very few managers feel like Tuca, or feel like some of the European managers, where they're like, my ideas are respected here, I can put my project into place, I will have time, and I'll be set up well for success, and like, you know, my family can live happily here, and those things that are sometimes on the field, sometimes off the field, I think often get neglected. I think your point is interesting too, you know, about Manchester United and about Tigres maybe even lacking a project, despite the fact that we all can identify that's Tuca's style. I was going to bring up what happens when he leaves, because I could very well see him leaving, although I wouldn't put him on the same level, obviously, as Sir Alex Ferguson, leaving that size of gap where Tigres, you could very easily see them kind of running from one side to the other, maybe one extreme to the other, like Atlas is doing in style, in terms of style, to try and replace Tuca. I don't know who his successor is there, and I'm not sure, you know, the president and the organization there knows either. And that's another factor, I think, is that oftentimes when someone does stay, there's no recourse, right? There's no answers. And I think, like you're saying, Tom, you know, that comes from a top-down structure. I guess, say, so one point that I would make is that I think you often see that sporting director role is almost honorary, right? You know, whereas in the US setup and in European setups, a technical director can be, you know, we know their names, maybe some of them, but they're really deciding who the club is signing, how the club is going to play, working with both the manager and the rest of the front office to kind of determine what's the identity of the club. I think in Mexico, we see some of those positions occupied almost ceremonially by, you know, former players who maybe are not as interested in some of the aspects of the game, or people who maybe have worked in other businesses. There's nothing wrong with that, right? We've seen examples of those types of people having success. But I think often you're seeing those positions occupied by people who perhaps are not equipped to sort of take control. And then you get players that are suggested by agents or suggested by these go-betweens. And they say, oh yeah, I know this guy. He says this guy's a great right back. I'm going to bring him in, not taking into consideration whether it's going to fit in with the manager's style.
Yeah. And I mean, not to, that makes me think of Xolos once again. I mean, not to focus on Xolos once again.
No,
but
they're a good example.
I mean,
a lot of managers.
I mean, what is it? Gustavo Quinteros. I mean, they're foreign manager. Last month he opened up and he said he didn't see eye to eye with Xolos. He wanted more collaboration with those in charge, and that certain players were brought in without him being part of the decision-making, you know? And that shows that, you know, who's really running the show here? You know, are there other Liga MX teams where the manager probably isn't collaborating as much with the sporting director, with those in ownership when it comes to this decision making? So, and like Tom said too, you know, it's just, you know, who is making the decisions here? It's difficult to really know sometimes.
Yeah. No. Yeah. It's. I mean, every club's different as well with the structure they've got. But yeah, I mean the amount of managers that don't even get that year is that's the kind of frustrating thing, and I think it goes back to the decision before, not just of why you're firing the manager, but why you hired him, you know. And I think, you know, Chivas with Luis Fernando Tena as well, it's like it didn't look like a good hiring when it was made. I think last September he did reasonably well, to be honest. I mean, he nearly got him into the playoffs in the Apertura, and then, you know, I think they were fifth position when the Clausura was cancelled. So, but then all of a sudden they lose three games, and it's decided that he's not the right person, and that, you know, now Vucetic is coming in. So yeah, it's very much a decision making exercise. I think that they're also, I think there's a lack of young Mexican managers. I think that there's problems in the quality of the courses given by the federation. I don't think they're anywhere near the level that they should be, that they are in Europe. And And yeah, I think that's one of the reasons that they go abroad. And I think when they go abroad, they've not necessarily done the homework as to who are they bringing in. So that's why I think it's kind of hit or miss. And yeah, it's just not the same pathway as well, I think, for the ex players as in other countries. And I think that the former players as well have to take a bit of it's their fault as well. I mean, you look at Gabriel Heinze in Argentina, who's now obviously, pretty much any reasonable sized job in both the Americas and even in Europe, he's been linked with now. But after his, a glittering playing career, playing at PSG, playing at Manchester United, playing at Real Madrid, going back to Newell's and winning a championship there as well, he went to Argentinos Juniors in the second division. Is that right? Yeah. He was in the second division, and the Argentine second division isn't like great. You know what I mean? You're not going to like nice places. You're not going to luxury places. Like he worked really hard. He took over a team and he got him promoted. He got him playing a good style of football. And then he goes to Vélez Sarsfield, and then, you know what I mean? And that's how he built his reputation. But what I'm saying is, even a name, that's played in World Cups, that played for some of the world's biggest, arguably the two of the three biggest clubs in the world, he's still kind of humble enough on the coaching side to go to a second division club and work his way up from there. Whereas I don't think a lot of the Mexican internationals would be willing to take that pay cut. And yeah, I think a lot of the time it's easier to kind of just become a pundit, which, Rafa Puente got absolutely hammered for saying that it's very comfortable being a pundit. But at the end of the day, it is. All you have to do is sit there on TV and give your opinion. And obviously it's a respected opinion because you've been there and you've done it, and not everybody can do it. But it's not like you have to go out and investigate. It's not like you have to go and, really, I don't know. It is a comfortable job at the end of the day.
But I think looking back at Liga...
They want the Pirlo plan where they can just be beautiful, play, and then become a manager of a really important team. But what were you going to say, Cesar?
I would say, but just looking back at Liga MX, I think we got to talk about the structure, though, now that you have up to 12 teams make the playoffs. Because, I mean, at the risk of oversimplifying things, I think for the most part, the reason why you see 270 days as the average is because most managers stay for more than one season because they either have success through qualifying for the playoffs, or they're given time to work on the project if they don't. And if all it takes is a few bad games a second season or a failure to qualify for the playoffs for most teams to drop a coach. But now that up to 12th gets a playoff spot, maybe this is a blessing disguise for those who want managers to have more time. I mean, I know it's almost laughable to think that a team could qualify for the postseason with potentially only 4 or 5 wins in a 17-game season, but maybe in the end, this gives a longer opportunity for Liga MX coaches going forward.
Yeah, I think so. It gives them something to point at the very least, right? You see it as well with we were terrible, but we won the cup or something like that. So fair enough. I just think that, it certainly could give people more of a berth on life. And the other structural change that we've seen in the past few months that I think could be significant is what we talked about on a previous episode of this podcast, the second division. It's still a bit unclear, but we talked about how critical the second division can be for players to develop. But as Tom mentions right there, in the case of Argentina, and certainly we see all over Europe as well, that can be a big proving ground, especially for recent players, but for other people too, who are young managers, to see if they've got it, right? There legitimately is pressure coaching even a team like Xolos or even a team like León or Pumas or something like that. Pumas, Grande, of course, there's pressure. But and then you talk about a Chivas or América or something like that. There is pressure in these jobs, right? But there's far less pressure if you're coaching one of the smaller teams. Not to say it doesn't matter, not to say it's not important, not to say there isn't any pressure. But I think it's a place where managers can go and try and kind of figure out if that's something they have a gift for, figure out their style or make mistakes with their tactics that they can fix over the next 3 weeks or whatever the case is, right? So I think that's also something that's holding back, not just Liga MX, but Mexican managers specifically. I had a chance, it'll be coming out in my newsletter soon, to talk with Jacques Passi. I'm not sure if someone's at my door or someone's pounding in a I think someone's hanging something up next door. Sorry.
Maybe it's Pepsi. He's like, John, you can't release the, you can't release this just yet. You gotta wait. You gotta wait.
Yeah. So he, I mean, he's the manager of the Dominican Republic. Had had success earlier in CONCACAF, but he's a young Mexican manager. Never played at a seriously high level. Managed Sinaloa for a minute, and he basically said, you know, there are too few Mexican managers who A, want to go abroad and challenge themselves, but also B, they're not being encouraged to. The Tom, you know, mentions the coaching badges. Too few are able to maybe go and spend the money that would take to go do a course in a place like England or France, where there is serious coaching education. We've seen a very successful partnership, MLS, sending their youth coaches and recently retired players to the French Federation, to the headquarters, to learn about youth development. You know, it's something we don't hear about with Mexico. I'm not saying nothing happens, but you really don't hear them partnering with countries that are more proficient with youth development. And look, Mexico has had plenty of success developing young players, but getting the players, as we've talked about again in a previous episode of the podcast, from success at the U23 or the U20 level to success at the senior level is something else that Mexico struggled with. So I think there are, I think there's a real opportunity for the Federation to step in and say, you know, a federation now being led by a player who is in the kind of categories that we're talking about, right? Who at his, at this stage in his career, if he weren't kind of directing the soccer direction of the federation, could be coaching or starting his coaching career. You know, we could see it. And maybe things are changing, right? Rafa getting this gig is something. I'm not sure that he's 100% the future of young Mexican ex-players coaching, but, you know, I think it's a start. But I do think this is an area where Mexico's behind. When you look even at other CONCACAF countries, even Costa Rica and the U.S., they have more managers. They just straight up have more young managers who you could see in 5 to 10 years managing a national team. And I'm not sure where those candidates are in Mexico right now.
I mean, that they're in the second division, right? And I hope that with more attention being brought to the second division, maybe as opposed to not only producing players, which is what it's supposed to be doing, it's going to help produce more young Mexican managers. Because when you look at the list of the current second division managers, you know, the Liga de Expansión, you know, you see a number of Mexican coaches who are under the age of 45. So like you said, John, I mean, it's just maybe these managers are going to be shielded from the pressure of Liga MX teams, and they'll have an opportunity to really make a name for themselves and hopefully make the move forward. But I mean, as we've mentioned, I mean, that doesn't tend to be the case, you know, in recent years. But I switching gears here a little bit, I mean, if we're looking at Liga MX teams and the ones who have made the most changes, I mean, it's not much of a surprise, Tom, right? I mean, number one, Veracruz in recent years, they've made up to, RIP Veracruz, 11 changes, what was it, since 2015? I mean, RIP Veracruz, but yeah, it's an interesting list to look at there. And what stands out to you?
I've not got the list, to be honest.
Oh, you don't have the list?
I'll run it through. Did 11 for Veracruz, 9 each for Atlas and Tijuana, 8 for Puebla. Cruz Azul and Santos tied at 7. Morelia and Pumas was 6. At 5, you got like a real logjam. León, Querétaro, América, Toluca, and Chivas. And I think that's going to be up 1 now that Chivas. So I think they're up to 6, but I'm not sure when 100% this was taken. Juarez, Necaxa, and Lobos Buap, another poor one out for with 4. Monterrey and Pachuca with 3 each, and then obviously Tigres rolling simply with Tuca. Statistics, our friends who again were sort of getting a lot of this information from, says the average in CONCACAF is that a team would have changed 5.3 times, so just a little over 5 times from 2015. That's around 1 a year, which is still, to me, a lot, right?
That is a lot.
It's just very difficult for a manager to. We hear a lot in U.S. sports, a three-year plan. It's almost become like a meme. You know, a manager or a coach shows up and they say, I got a three-year plan. We're going to get to the playoffs in year 2. We're going to win a title in year 3. But I think it is a sort of reasonable expectation, a reasonable amount of time to implement an idea if the institution doesn't already have something to build on, which is what we're kind of talking about, that you see around the world that oftentimes there is something to build on. Look, I joked about Pirlo earlier, but it's going to be – it's tough to see Juventus falling – you know, they should win Serie A still because of the talent that they have, because of the foundation that they've laid and the roster that's been put together. Even if they don't win the league, they're not going to fall out of like the top 2 or 3, right? And that's because of what they've built. So I think it does kind of come down, Tom, to those projects that you're mentioning and the opportunity to actually build something.
Yeah, no, I think the changes of managers is just a symptom of the wider problem, mm-hmm. which is decision making in the Mexican game, which is professionalization, which is kind of sporting intelligence in terms of, you know, making decisions, picking players, picking managers and sticking with them, and, you know, having longer term projects that at the end of the day, I mean, I think sometimes we forget that the idea behind having longer term projects is that your team gets better. You know what I mean? You can actually forecast to a degree the future. You can bring through the younger players. You can, I don't know, you can plan the squad. Whereas if you change your manager every year, then there's a different playing style. There might be a different formation, the different players that you might be looking at. I mean, it throws the whole institution out unless you're running the right way. So I think we've got to mention as well the way that the clubs kind of just go back to managers that, I mean, for me, it's unbelievable how many times Mexican clubs hire the same manager who's already been there at the club. I mean, it's absolutely crazy. And you know, sometimes it works out. But it's like, for me, it shows complete lack of imagination that the same guys, you've hired a manager once, you've fired him once, but then you're so out of ideas about what to do with your club that you hire the same guy that you fired. And that you must have had some reasons for firing before that. So, I mean,
I would love to see the numbers on that.
It'd be interesting.
And not even the same club, right? But I think you see this, like, this carousel of Liga MX managers where, you know, Rafa Puente is a young Mexican manager, but I don't think he's done anything now to merit maybe another opportunity in Liga MX. But that said, you have to think he's going to get one just because of how the league works, right? He has experience. He's coached 2-3 teams now. And you just have to think that he's going to be back in the mix, even though what has he done to deserve that, right? And I think that lack of imagination, Tom, is one thing, but I think it's also a lack of research, right? If you have an open coaching vacancy right now, you should be able to come up with a list of 5 to 10 candidates from around the world who feasibly are at your level. You're not going to get Pep. You're not going to get Pirlo. He's occupied. But you could probably have 5 to 10 candidates from the Americas, from Mexico or North America, right? And really, you know, we haven't seen anyone get an opportunity, you know, other than Oscar Pereja, who wasn't given a lot of opportunity, I would say, at Cholos. You haven't seen a lot of wooing of managers from MLS. You know, these are options, I think, that are not often explored. Too often, it's simply the devil you know, right? And I think it's a carousel that's a big problem. And one of the reasons why it feels like Mexico changes even more than the numbers say, where it feels like, you know, Mexico is worse than Turkey even, is because you're seeing the same faces over and over again. Oh, there's Chepo. Oh, there's Vucetich. Oh, there's Tena.
Exactly.
You know, oh, there's Romano. You know, these guys just keep popping up. And even Coca, right? I'm not super pessimistic about what he can do at Atlas, but like, he's just a guy who you've seen before, and that seems to be why he got this job.
Right? Yeah, once you're in, you're in. You know, I think that's symptomatic of just you know, the Mexican soccer bubble. You know, and I would love to see a chart on the number of different managers, you know, used within the league, because once again, although Liga MX has its fair share of firings, as we alluded to, there's plenty of managers who never leave and just bounce around from team to team to team. You know, and as we mentioned, it'd be nice to see more young Mexican managers. There is, I mean, we got to bring up Diego over at Querétaro. He's only 35 years old, but then again, it seems like the only reason he was brought up was because of the massive roster transition from Atlante over to Querétaro. You know, so I mean, going forward, it's just I think what I would like to see from Liga MX is a nice balance that, yes, you would like to see some outside hires. I would love to see more outside hires, more outside talent from outside the Mexican soccer bubble. But also balance, it also includes more young Mexican managers. But I can't see that going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a separate debate, that, because I think the debate is, are they good enough? You know what I mean? And that's why with what's going on at Querétaro with Alex Diego, it's, you know, all of a sudden, every time a young Mexican manager does get a job like that, there's a lot of pressure that goes on. Because it's like, oh, it feels like it could be a knock-on effect. But yeah, I think what John was saying there is just a lack of imagination in terms of these hirings, and looking to other markets as well. I mean, I think I think would be hugely beneficial. And I think MLS is one of the markets just because there's some really good managers there right now. And I think you could even be looking over to Europe and not just kind of Spain and necessarily Portugal, but other leagues as well. I mean, sometimes I think you have to really think out the box, and I think that's problematic within Liga MX. It's a very short term, yeah. And not just Liga MX. It's also, you know, it's Mexico as well. It happens in politics. It happens in, you know, in business here as well. There's a short termism. It's a cultural thing as well. But yeah, I mean, I think in the wider football world as well. I mean, if you're hiring a CEO or you're hiring a key manager in a corporation, then the process can take months. And whereas, you know, in football and especially in Liga MX, I mean, Rafa Puente draws a game on the Sunday and 2 days later, Coca's already in Mexico. I mean, it's just the process is so short, and I just doubt that there's a profound kind of analysis done of what the manager that is coming in, what kind of manager they want. And I think it is a genuine issue, because I think it has an effect on especially the younger players. I don't think it's very difficult to plan the debut and kind of plan how they're going to develop when the principal guy who's making that decision is changing so often. I think thinking outside the box and bringing a few other names in is definitely what needs to happen. And I think the examples are there of when you have done that with Caixinha, with Almada, with Almeida, and when you do that kind of thing with Diego Alonso as well, I think you can be rewarded. I mean, not all the time, but I mean, the opportunity to get kind of a competitive advantage, marginal gain on your competitors is great, because at the end of the day, then this is the thing with the Mexican managers. You got to put it in a global perspective right now. Luis Fernando Tena, outside of Mexico, where would he manage? I honestly don't think, I think Central America, you know, you know, you look at, you know, Rafa Puente right now, outside of Mexico, where would he manage? Again, I think Central America. I mean, you know, the market outside of Mexico isn't great for these guys. I think maybe, you know, Miguel Herrera could possibly, you know, MLS, I'm sure he'd find work. I'm sure he'd find work in South America. He's probably an exception. Maybe Nacho Ambriz as well, who's done, you know, a fantastic job with León and has experience in Europe alongside Javier Aguirre. But outside of that, I mean, I think that's the kind of litmus test. Where do these managers go? And not just the Mexican ones. It's like Romano. Romano can go and get a job in the second division in Argentina if he really, really wanted to, if he's so desperate to coach. But no, same with La Volpe, to be honest. I mean, he's another one who keeps coming up. You've got Cristante, who, again, where's he going to work outside of Mexico? But guaranteed he's kind of pushing for that Pumas job. I think Mexico really badly needs a couple of things right now. One of them is a really, really talented young manager who can absolutely kick it with the best young managers in the world. And the other one's a really star young player who's absolutely brilliant. Who's, you know, I think the Mexican game needs kind of that, a bit of a lift from those two quarters for me.
So you're saying Thomas Boy? That's the way going forward, Tom, right? Thomas Boy.
But the crazy thing is that I saw, like, it was, I was watching a match and they had a poll, you know, one of those live polls, which who knows how the hell those get calculated, but like,
yeah,
Boy was leading the rank of who he was out of his coach. And I don't know, maybe there's like, you know, some troll voting in there, but I was just like, what do you, I mean, I think the lack of imagination goes beyond simply the director's box. I'll say that.
Yeah. Just a quick point though as well. I think the way they rationalize that in a way is that, and I completely disagree with it, but it's like, oh, Mexican football is different. You know, oh, if you don't have experience here, then you're going to struggle. But everywhere says that. They said that when Pep Guardiola went to Man City, you know what I mean? And yeah, he did struggle in that first season, but it's not something that can't be overcome.
We said that about MLS, man. I used to say that. I used to say a foreign manager couldn't succeed in MLS, and I couldn't be more wrong. Tata Martino is a great example.
Well, the thing is that these teams get rewarded too, because it's a roll of the dice. You know, you bring a guy in, he gets a few wins, and you get a spot in seventh or eighth. You know, that's seen as success. So I think it's a roll of the dice, and certain teams see that as success, and that just leads to more rolls of the dice with other Liga MX managers that just continue to be a part of the carousel.
The only thing I'd say is that I don't know how much of a league roll of the dice it is when the ones that are on the carousel haven't necessarily done anything for so long.
You know what I mean? It's going to be easier, though. They just needed to get to 12th. Job done.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool, but anywho, I think we gotta wrap things up. We gotta watch some Champions League. We gotta watch some Hector Herrera in just a few minutes. But many thanks to Tom. Many thanks to John. Many thanks to listeners for checking out this episode. Always feel free to let us know your thoughts online. We'd love to hear your feedback. And until next time, we'll see you on the next episode. See you guys around.